Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Jessica. And thank you to everyone listening to another installment of the Left of Lansing podcast. And yes, I'm starting to finally feel a lot better after dealing with COVID these last few weeks. It is such a great feeling. And thanks to all of you who listened to last week's episode featuring Livingston County progressive activist Casey Helton. I was so happy to see the response that Casey received. And like I said last week, the state is much better with people like Casey on the front lines. Now, like Jessica says, this is where I spend time highlighting the progressives fighting to make Michigan the anti-Florida. This is a state that believes in actual education, where we don't ban books that hurt the feelings of white supremacists. This is a state where we don't give in to hate. We were part of the Union in the Civil War, and we believed, like Abraham Lincoln, that the Declaration of Independence was the apples of gold, with the Constitution being the picture of silver wrapped all around it. This is the state where we believe we must invest in education, because without it, not only do we not attain enlightenment, which was always a hallmark of this country, but more to our present situation, we won't attract businesses if we don't have a talented workforce. This is the state where we allow people to be exactly who they are and have always meant to be. We don't preach against hate against the LGBTQ plus community, and in fact, we embrace everyone first and foremost because we in Michigan believe that everyone has the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We progressives don't cynically turn to hatred for political goals. We don't seek to diminish or demean our fellow citizens. We don't turn to hate or point blame at those who have little protection because we see it as expedient to attack them for some political gain. No! We're not Florida, because in Florida, they ban Black history, Hispanic history, gay rights history, and basically all American history. They do it in hopes that young people will turn into hateful, weak-minded right-wing parrots who do the bidding of the rich donors who use those parrots to help elect right-wingers who will then vote for major tax cuts for those donors. We believe in expanding minority rights in Michigan just as we did by adding extra protections for our LGBTQ plus Michiganders thanks to the work done by legislative Democrats. We believe that teachers should be viewed as allies, not enemies, for educating tolerance and real American history in their classes. We believe in women's rights and the rights to their own bodily autonomy. The government doesn't have a say over their right to have an abortion, but in Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, Republicans there believe that the state has full control over a woman's body. In South Carolina, Republicans enacted a harsh abortion ban this week, and a state representative there named Tom Davis said he supported punishing women because, quote, at some point in time, the right of the state to see the unborn child born takes precedent over a woman's right to her body, unquote. You see, they want to pass laws punishing and hurting women while rewarding rapists by forcing women to have their babies. As comedian John Fugelsang tweeted as he responded to a feeble-minded right-winger this week who asked him to name a right that men have but women don't, John said, the right not to be pregnant. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Why in the world would a woman or a couple want to live in states like Texas, where they show little concern for a woman's health? There's an ABC News story from last week that described how a Texas woman had to develop sepsis until doctors could induce life-saving abortion measures. Why? Because the fetus had a heartbeat, but no chance of surviving. She had to sit for 22 hours, developing a high fever and shaking uncontrollably. I mean, talk about agony. Talk about cruelty. As I said last week, to the right wing, cruelty is always the point. Now, the woman survived, but is dealing with complications, and her uterus is not normal either. What is small government about forcing women to go through such a horrific experience? Losing the baby is already gut-wrenching enough, but then to force her to suffer because right-wingers don't understand medical science? What's Christian about that? Again, it's all about punishing women. That's what they care about. In Michigan, women don't have to undergo such trauma to their bodies, as we have enshrined a woman's abortion rights in our state constitution. Also, this past week, Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed a bill into law that adds another protection under Elliot Larson, as residents can no longer get fired for getting an abortion. Wow! I mean, it's amazing. Allowing women to have protections under the law? Call us crazy here! Trust me, women across the country are taking note. And so are businesses. I mean, why would a business want to be part of such a hateful and regressive right-wing Republican government in Texas, Nebraska, South Carolina, or Florida? We also believe here that these laws are not only just humane and decent laws, but they are also the most economically speaking smart laws. Abortion rights are economic rights. The right to an education is an economic right. The right to be treated equally and fairly is both an American and economic right. The right to form a union, the right to collectively bargain is an American and economic right. I mean, why in the world has the right wing led by Betsy DeVos and her family for years tried to weaken unions? Easy. It's to weaken workers and our public education system while at the same time enriching themselves and their rich friends. All at the expense at a major economic cost to the state because power means more to them than Michigan's future. You know, I have to tell you, I love hearing how some old-time Republicans are just so stunned by today's extreme right-wing Michigan Republican Party. But why should they be stunned? It's been trending this way for decades. This was always the inevitable outcome. Today's Republicans have no real economic principles, no real education principles, no real environmental or health principles. The only principles they have is that they hate those they don't understand. They hate tolerance. They are taught to revile tolerance. They are taught to own the libs. Right-wingers believe white supremacy history first and foremost. They believe in extreme Christian nationalism and authoritarianism. Today's Michigan Republican Party has morphed into such a party which has no values but wants to apply the cruelty that Florida's Republicans are doing to trans kids and their parents. Today's Michigan Republican Party wants to apply the cruelty that Mississippi Republicans are applying to their trans residents. For instance, a school district down there is forcing a trans girl to dress like a boy if she just wants to attend her graduation. I mean, what difference does it make to so-called small government conservatives how a person dresses? And how is it following in Jesus' teachings that we must not protect those who can't protect themselves? Of course, as we've learned, the right-wing parrots are simply following the lead of many right-wing conservative groups who've designed these anti-trans laws in all of these states. The AP found this week that many states basically passed the same kinds of anti-trans laws thanks to these rich right-wing lobbying groups. Not surprised whatsoever. These same people who now hate trans Americans once hated gay marriage and also hated interracial marriage. Well, actually, you know what? They probably still hate gay marriage and interracial marriage. I don't want those people representing the majority here in Michigan, and they are not. As I pointed out last week, despite many right-wing efforts throughout the state, including the right-wing's complete takeover of the Michigan Republican Party, progressives are fighting back across the state against these rigid right-wing reactionary Republicans. We saw it in Livingston County, where activists like last week's guest, Casey Helton, are fighting back in numerous ways to limit the right-wing grip in that county. That also goes for the Livingston County Democratic Party, who are fighting too. I'd just like to quickly point out an error that I made while talking to Ms. Helton last week. I said Republicans won both legislative seats in that county, and I was disastrously wrong. As Livingston County Democratic Party Chair Judy Debenauer said to me in an email, she said that Jennifer Conlin won the 48th House District seat in the past midterms. Her victory proved to be huge for the Democrats in taking control of the House and in winning the trifecta. Ms. Debenauer told me that Representative Collins' victory was, and I quote, built on the years of door knocking that our county commission candidates did in Hamburg, Genoa, and Putnam townships. How true indeed, and thank you, Judy, for your email and for correcting me. Unfortunately, though, for every victory, there are other battles facing us. This very week, the Ottawa County Board of Commissioners followed in the footsteps of Livingston County, approving a stupid resolution declaring itself a quote unquote constitutional county. Why?
All right, it is done. All right.
Because of what you just heard, that was Governor Whitmer signing extreme risk protection order bills into law, which allows a judge to remove guns from someone believed to be a risk to others or themselves. But the Ottawa County Board's resolution calls on law enforcement and the county prosecutor to ignore those laws. Huh. I thought law and order was like a hallmark of our society. But that's just one of the many nutty things happening in Ottawa County recently. But many are standing up against that movement. And next week, we'll talk with longtime progressive activist Joe Spaulding on how he and others are fighting back in Ottawa County. You see, activists both within the Democratic Party and outside the Democratic Party are working hard to make Michigan a more viable place to live socially and economically. I mean, we're trying to move the state forward after going backwards during 40 years of Republican rule. So coming up here in a few minutes, I'll be speaking with business writer Rick Haglund from Michigan Advance, and you've probably heard me mention Rick's articles from time to time here on the podcast. I want to pick his brain and see if he believes Governor Whitmer's bigotry is bad for business will someday pay off here for the state, and if he believes that Democrats are showing a different and more effective way to help the state grow in the future. It's always interesting when Rick shares his viewpoints right here on the podcast, so please just hang around. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, do me a favor and give The Left of Lansing a good review on wherever you listen to your podcast. One reason I'm doing this podcast is because, like I said, I would like to put a spotlight on all the efforts that the good progressives are putting forth to make our state one of the best in the union. Another reason is because, unlike my previous terrestrial right-wing radio job, I can be myself. And I can tell the stories I want to tell. You know, I will never forget when a former supervisor walked into my studio and advised me on refraining from calling for Rick Snyder's resignation after the Flint water crisis. I told him, you know what? I mean, children were poison and pregnant mothers were poison. I thought for sure that would get some of the listeners on my side, especially since Snyder's emergency managers were to blame not only for facilitating the poisoning, but for doing nothing afterwards. I was then told that while I had some good points, I had to watch myself because the station might lose access to the county Republican Party. I mean, that was the big worry. Not that an entire city's water was poisoned, a city in Michigan, a city in America. No, the big worry was that the station might lose access to the county Republican Party. Everyone, that happens a lot more than you think, but that does not happen here on the Left of Lansing podcast.
The Left of Lansing podcast. If you truly want to get Pat fired up, talk about Tigers baseball or how you think the 90s produced the worst music of any decade. You've been warned. Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com and follow him on Twitter at leftoflansing. Here's Pat.
You can hear this episode and get an archive of past episodes at leftoflansing.com. And you can also find all episodes wherever you listen to your podcast. And I would like to thank Audioboom for providing the platform. I'm happy once again to welcome back Rick Haglund, who writes the Misha Economy column with Michigan Advance. That's at michiganadvance.com. He's covered many economic issues in Michigan, including, of course, the auto industry for years. Rick, thanks once again for being back here on the Left of Lansing podcast.
Good to be with you.
Rick, how many years would you say that you've been covering the economic scene here in our state?
Ouch. It goes back to the mid-80s.
All right. So it has been a while and you've seen lots of things happen here in the state of Michigan, especially on the business side. You've seen things change and maybe really haven't seen a whole lot of change or enough change. And that's why ever since restarting my podcast this year, I caught myself quoting many of your columns because I find your research and opinions to be quite insightful and fair. So, for example, I talked about your column, Whitmer says bigotry is bad for business. Is it true? Now, you highlighted her slogan, which I think is a worthy one, but even so, you talk about how states like Texas and Florida, which each have passed some demeaning and draconian laws when it comes to things like abortion, book bans, attacking universities and educators, signing on to anti-LGBTQ plus legislation, that despite all that, these states are still doing better than Michigan economically. I mean, Texas and Florida are still led in job growth in 2022, despite passing all of these hateful policies, as I call them. I know this has been a trend for a long time in those states, but Rick, is it really sustainable? Can they really keep doing this?
That's a good question. It's kind of hard to say on the surface of it. It looks like it is generally because, you know, so much of the population of the United States is just moving south. That's been going on for a long time, and those states are benefiting from that in terms of job growth. But some of the things that we have seen happen just in the past couple of years, the abortion decision by the Supreme Court and some of those states kind of hard line on abortion, kind of calls it into question of with young people getting out of college, looking as to where they want to go, they might in the next few years be thinking twice about moving to some of those places. And Florida in particular, under Governor DeSantis, there really seems to be almost intent on driving young talent away with the stands on abortion and LGBTQ plus people of color. You probably noted that the NAACP came out with a travel advisory warning people of color about traveling to Florida because the state is becoming so hostile to them. And the other thing that I think is just fascinating is DeSantis picking this big fight with Disney, which is one of their top employers in the country or in the state, basically trying to limit some of the things that they do there. And it's just hard to imagine a governor attacking one of its major employers. I just can't imagine Whitmer trying to do that with General Motors or Ford. I think that's really is bad for business.
Did you ever think, Rick, that you would see conservatives who, you know, for years they would always proclaim that they were free market capitalists and free market conservatives. Did you ever think you'd see a Republican Party like today that would attack a company like Disney, which is kind of a major, like you just said, a major company in that state?
No, I never would have imagined that. I mean, the Republican Party for so long has been a pro-business kind of party, and they've really shifted. They still say that they're pro-business, but it's more small business, and they don't like major corporations. They think have gone woke, so to speak, with their diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, and kind of trying to attract people from all walks of life. It's just a remarkable change by the Republican Party.
Have you been able to find anything online, any articles about the business community down in Florida, getting their reactions from what Governor DeSantis is doing down there? Or does it seem like that they are just staying quiet because they're still getting their tax cuts?
You know, I haven't seen anything specifically. I mean, I haven't looked very hard, but it seems like they're staying fairly quiet. They're just kind of spooked, I think, by the governor attacking Disney and saying, hey, if he can go after a corporation like that, I could be next. And I think they're just kind of laying low right now to see how that all works out.
Rick Haglund from Michigan Advances joining us here on this week's podcast. Now, you stated in that same column that site selection did not list Michigan in the top 10 for investment projects in 2022 last year. What would you list as some of the reasons as to why Michigan has been lagging behind other states, including states that are close to us here, like Ohio and Indiana?
You know, some of it has to do with Michigan being fairly late to the game in terms of getting really aggressive on incentives. And whether that's good or bad, ultimately, I think it's yet to be seen. But some of those states have been very aggressive about that. And the numbers, I think, get skewed a little bit because one or two major projects can really put a state really near the top. An example of that is, you know, Ford's multi-billion dollar investments in Kentucky and in Tennessee. You know, it only takes a couple of those for you to become in the top 10. So I think that's a big part of it. Some of this is sort of bookkeeping in some respects, that some states do a better job of really tracking where the investment's going than other states. They pay more attention to these rankings.
Democrats finally have the trifecta here for the first time in 40 years, and they've only had it here for a couple of months. I guess we will just have to wait and see if being the anti-Florida will really pay dividends in the long term, I suppose.
Yeah, I asked Tim Bartik, who is the really top economist at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research, about that. Tim has done a lot of work on incentives and what drives labor decisions, investment decisions. And he was saying that it's kind of too early to tell because of the Supreme Court decision on abortion, which was just about a year ago. It's been in that kind of same time frame where some of those states are really ramping up their anti-LGBT LGBTQ plus policies as well. So he said, you know, it could take a couple of years before we really see whether it has an impact or not.
I would just have to think, though, just considering where our state has been trending for the last few decades, which we're going to get to here in just a moment, I would have to think that it's worth the gamble, which isn't maybe really a gamble since, I mean, we're talking about human rights. When we expand LGBTQ plus rights or women's rights or women's health when it comes to legalizing abortion, making sure that it is in the Constitution here in the state of Michigan, I mean, I would say that's probably worth the gamble. It can't hurt in the long term. I just don't see any downside to it.
Oh, absolutely. Kurt Metzger, he's retired now, but he still keeps his hand in the demographics game. He's a longtime demographer in the Detroit area. He wrote a piece a while back, I think it was in Bridge Magazine, basically saying that this really should be part of Michigan's economic development strategy, is to try to attract people in some of these states.
We're talking with Rick Hagland here on the Left of Lansing podcast this week. Just this week, you released a column on MichiganAdvance.com highlighting Michigan's population drain over the last few decades. The column is titled, "Time is Running Out on Michigan's Population and Prosperity Decline." And in that column, Rick, you're saying something that I, and I know many others, have been shouting out as loud as we can, that Michigan is getting older and older population-wise, and it doesn't seem like that we really have the political nor the collective will to really change direction or even challenge the direction that we've been going here for so many years. And Rick, it's pretty frustrating.
Yes, it is. And you're absolutely right. I mean, these statistics, as startling as they are really no surprise to policymakers, but yet for whatever reason, you know, nobody on the policy level has really gotten particularly serious about this. I do hear that Governor Whitmer is going to be announcing some sort of a population commission next week at the Mackinac Island Policy Conference. And I don't know any of the details of that, but maybe we're finally starting to break the ice on that. But you're right, we just have not confronted that.
But not only are we getting older by losing our younger people to other states, but as you point out, wages and salaries have also dropped. You know, you talk about Michigan's income per capita has us now ranked, I think, what, 34th in the country? Is that right? I think somewhere around there.
That's right.
Rick, is it primarily that as a population, we are stuck in this auto factory kind of mindset that we have to have these auto factory jobs, and that's the only way we'll rebuild and become the Michigan that we were back in the 50s? I mean, it seems like that's, for many, that is just the mindset that we are still in, rather than paying attention to the future economy.
Absolutely. I mean, you can certainly see that in terms of all the emphasis that the state has put on incentives, which financial incentives, which almost always go to manufacturing companies. This, you know, the SOAR fund that they created has spent untold billions of incentives to attract new battery plants, for instance, that really are not going to pay a whole lot more than you can make in fast food restaurants or major retailers like Target, at least, you know, as an entry level wage. We just can't get over this notion that we can't bring back the old days of high wage auto jobs where, you know, you could make enough with a high school education in an auto plant to have a nice house, have a cottage up north, a few toys, a snowmobile, a boat, maybe save some money for your kids to go to college. It just doesn't exist anymore. And we just don't seem to be able to accept it.
Does the Michigan Chamber of Commerce accept it, that we have to change?
You know, I don't know about the state chamber. They tend to be a little more conservative than a lot of them. But I think, you know, places, you know, the Detroit Regional Chamber and the Grand Rapids Chamber, for instance, some of these local chambers of commerce, I really think they do. Plus, you know, as I pointed to one of the studies that have just come out from the business leaders for Michigan, which are the CEOs of all the major corporations in the state. And it's just fascinating when you read in their report where they're saying that one of our problems is that we're trying to recreate a Michigan that doesn't exist anymore. I thought that was quite a statement.
It's nice to hear that Governor Whitmer may address this issue of our aging population at the Mackinac Conference next week, but that's just the start. You know, you also wrote in that column how Michigan is becoming the second slowest growing state in the union, how we're not only growing older, but also growing sicker with lower life expectancy than others. As someone who has lived his whole life here, and where Republicans had control of at least one piece of the governing trifecta since, what, 1983. Is it safe to conclude, because this is how I conclude, so I'm going to ask you if you could have the same conclusions, Republican policies help lead us down to this decline?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think even some in the business community are starting to say the same thing. You know, as I pointed out in the column, I mean, the answer to just about every economic ill under the Republicans was tax cuts and smaller government. They just really didn't tackle any of these bigger problems in terms of population loss or income decline. And just to some degree, they abetted the income decline by basically denigrating the value of a college education, saying, well, just go to trade school and you can do fine. And hey, there's a lot of great jobs in skilled trade, and I don't begrudge anybody that wants to go into that. But the fact of the matter is the states that are doing the best economically are those that have a higher percentage of residents with four-year degrees. The data are clear about that. And we, under 40 years of Republican control, there was just no real interest in that data.
And Rick, you beat me to the punch there, because I was going to ask you about higher education, because I would have to think that reinvesting in higher education in Michigan would be one way to attract younger people to the state, of keeping younger people here in the state. I believe that's kind of an important step that we have to take.
That's right. You know, I do have to credit Governor Whitmer and the legislature for something they have done fairly recently, which is a huge deal that I don't think people appreciate that as much as they should. I believe it's called the Michigan Competitive Scholarship. That name could be wrong, but essentially what it does is it's going to offer scholarships. I think it's up to $5,500 a year for, you know, anybody that goes to a four-year public university in Michigan.
Is it the Michigan Achievement Scholarship?
Yes.
That's it.
The interesting thing about that idea came out of the Republican-controlled Senate last year and then finally got adopted this year. I mean, that's a huge step in making college more affordable and hopefully attracting more people into getting a four-year degree.
Are there other steps the Democratic legislature could take here to help attract younger people to want to relocate here to Michigan when it comes to our economy? Like, for instance, would more investments, as we're seeing Democrats put into K-12 education, would that be a starter, including the free breakfast and lunch for all students? And maybe we could look at childcare for younger mothers who are in the workplace. I mean, are there areas that Democrats could really tackle here?
Yeah, there certainly are. A lot of the experts that I talk about how a sense of place is and quality communities are really important, that young people want to live where there's vibrant communities, where they're walkable, there's culture, there's things to do, a good environment for recreational activities, public transit in the bigger areas of the state, you know, or the younger people are less interested in cars than they used to be, although they still.
Rick, are we seeing any movement down, let's say, in Southeast Michigan and around the state when it comes to rail and public transit? Are we seeing more of a push?
No, I really don't see it yet. Maybe in a small way. Oakland County, for instance, recently passed a transit millage, although it doesn't have anything to do with rail. I don't think anybody's doing much of anything with rail right now, but to increase bus service in the county. The only significant rail project that I'm familiar with in terms of a proposal is one that would run a line from Ann Arbor to Traverse City. Wow, that's more of a tourist kind of thing. We really don't have intercity rail like some communities do. We don't have light rail that connects people from the suburbs to the city. I mean, and there's just no support for that.
Okay. I understand that. It just seems like that's something that has to be done here. I was wondering if you could maybe just expound a little bit on our immigration policy or lack thereof. Do you think that hurt Michigan here in these past few decades?
What I hear is that the problem there is that the amount of immigrants that we can bring here is really dependent on federal immigration policy. If they're, you know, if the feds are letting fewer people in, there isn't a whole lot that Michigan can do about that, except, you know, be welcoming and be aggressive with the feds and saying, hey, we're interested in having more people here.
All right, Rick, just one more question here then. Getting back to the Democrats who are in complete power, One of the things they did do was flood hundreds of millions of dollars back into the Strategic Outreach and Attraction Reserve Fund, or the SOAR Fund, which you've already brought up here today. And that'll go towards that Ford electric battery plant. Now, it's supposed to create jobs that'll pay somewhere between $20 to $50 per hour. But isn't that still, here's how I look at it. I look at it that it's still doing what we've done in the past, which is showering corporations with lots of cash and incentives. But to what end? I mean, I just feel like we're doing the same thing over again. Are we expecting different results?
Well, probably for quite a long time, unfortunately. Yeah. There's actually quite a bit of support for this in the population. And, you know, I just, once again, Michigan is a state that just is really big on nostalgia, you know, and wanting to recreate what used to be. And I think there was a Detroit regional chamber poll that found like 70% of the people in Michigan supported the SOAR Fund investments for factory jobs. So I think it's going to be tough to reverse that, although I think there's some that are questioning the size of these investments.
You know, I'm wondering if Democrats just wanted to appease or please their governor here for the first few months by plugging all that money into the SOAR Fund, but from now on, they will take a more critical eye before they start giving away all kinds of incentives and handouts to corporations. Do you see that change?
Yeah, I think they're going to take a closer look to it, but I still think there's a strong constituency for doing that. You know, even on the federal level, you know, Biden's talking about rebuilding the economy from the ground up and creating union jobs, which is a laudable thing, but there's just really limits as to how effective that's going to be.
Right. Well, I don't know. Just seems like trickle-down economics to me a little bit, but you know, we'll continue to discuss this here on future podcasts. For now, Rick Haglund, I'd just like to thank you so very much for being on. You can read all of Rick's articles on MichiganAdvance.com. Plus, Rick, if people like to follow you, they can do so on Twitter, correct?
Correct.
Rick, thank you so very much for being back on the podcast. And I'm sure that I will have you on here real soon because there is so much going on economically here and you are my go-to guy. So thanks a lot, Rick Haglund, for being on the podcast again. Take care of yourself.
Thank you for having me.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? Leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
Special thanks to Rick Haglund from Michigan Advance for joining me here this week. And everybody over at Michigan Advance, they do some great work over there. As I've said, I read them every morning for news and analysis here in Michigan and across the country. I will provide a link to Michigan Advance and to Rick Haglund's articles when I post this episode on leftoflansing.com. And don't forget, you can get an archive of all previous episodes on leftoflansing.com. Time now for the LOL Last Call, and it's something that I've been wanting to bring up here for quite a while. Recently, the State Senate Appropriations Committee okayed a $175 million investment in state funds for an electric battery plant in the Mecosta County town of Big Rapids. The company is named Gotion, which is a California-based company that manufactures lithium-ion batteries, but its parent company is a Chinese-based company. Now, the committee gave the green light by just one vote, with every Republican voting against because of the company's Chinese connections, and their objections sounded, of course, more xenophobic than anything else. Rick Haglund wrote in a recent column titled "Michigan Republicans Show Hostility to China After Courting Companies for Years," and here's what he had to say. China, which started investing in electric vehicles decades ago, last year controlled 56% of the global battery market and produced most of the materials needed to make them. But not a single Republican in Congress voted for the Inflation Reduction Act, which offers lucrative incentives for U.S. automakers to eventually end their reliance on China. Makes you wonder which side the GOP is on, doesn't it? It's a perfect point by Rick because Republicans don't want China leading in the battery industry, but they aren't doing anything to change it by voting against President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. Now, I just don't know what the GOP stands for anymore. Well, the only thing Republicans really stand for is owning the libs and for hurting Governor Whitmer and President Biden. I mean, why else would my dear Congressman Republican John Molinar vote against the Inflation Reduction Act while at the same time blasting the state for okaying the Goshen deal. It's in his district, and he gave in to the right-wing xenophobia. Well played, John. Well played. You are certainly a man of character. Let's be real. The only reason why Republicans were suddenly outraged about the Goshen plant is because it would create jobs during a Democratic administration in Michigan. Oh, sure. They can complain about the company being from China, but come on. Republicans loved us doing business with China for years. Let's not fool ourselves. The corporate right wing loved doing business with China for decades. The Republican Party didn't mind that the corporate right wing would do business with China for decades because, in turn, that would help the Republican Party quite handsomely in the pocketbooks. Just ask Donald Trump and his family. Come on, people, keep it real. And I will keep it real by saying there were corporate Democrats through the years who backed doing business with China too, without putting any kind of safeguards, real safeguards, for American workers. Let's not forget that Michigan's previous governor, Rick Snyder, traveled on trade missions a total of 8 times during his tenure to China, and I don't recall any of his fellow Republicans freaking out over it back then. As Rick Haglund said in his column, during Snyder's tenure, Chinese companies invested $1.21 billion in the state and created 6,300 jobs. Today, there are 269 Chinese companies operating in Michigan that employ around 32,450 workers, according to the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The Snyder administration even created a Michigan China Week to celebrate economic ties between the state and China. I mean, how soon we forget all this, right? But suddenly, and it was during the pandemic, the Republican Party and the right wing turned real hostile towards China thanks to Trump's reliance on bigotry, calling COVID the Chinese flu or Kung flu. You remember that one? Republicans now are against anything China because they believe in some conspiracy. Hey, I know, how shocking. Republicans and the right wing believe in conspiracies. They believe that China will lead Michigan down a dangerous path towards communism. I mean, they have no economic stance. They have no principles, as Rick pointed out. Look, I don't trust China, and I've been backing candidates who always tout America first and foremost. I loathe China's horrific human rights record just like anyone else, and I hated how we gave carte blanche to American companies to exploit the cheap labor over there at the expense of the American workers. And we saw how devastating it turned out for Americans when we suddenly realized we couldn't produce anything here in our country during the pandemic. That being said, it's amazing how empty the Republican Party, both here in the state and across the country, has really truly become. I mean, now they're against anything Chinese. It's really about xenophobia. They relied on fear and bigotry in their hopes of stopping the Goshen plant from starting. And here's the sad part, okay? There were good reasons to block the incentives from going forward. State Senator Jeff Irwin was one of 3 Democrats, one of 3, who voted against the project. The Ann Arbor Democrat said to Michigan Advance that he's concerned about the pay and benefits of the jobs that we are seeking to subsidize. He added, "I'm also concerned about the viability of the project and the capacity of the Michigan Strategic Fund to oversee and ensure accountability regarding the promises made by the company." Now, see right there, I think I would have joined Senator Irwin and the other 2 Democrats for that reason alone. That's a sound reason. It's something I've always believed in. Let's make sure that it actually will help Michigan in the long term. But I would have joined Senator Irwin when he told Michigan Advance this as well. He said, "The xenophobic approach championed by the Michigan Republican Party did not play into my no vote. I think Governor Whitmer is wise to build bridges with people around the world, including China." Irwin went on to say that it's sad that the Republican Party has transformed into a group that will say anything to get elected, even if it promotes and plays off anti-Asian sentiment. Hear, hear. Look, it's impossible to take Republicans seriously when one of their arguments against the plant was shouted by Senator Lana Thice of Brighton when she argued, okay, listen to this, "A disaster at the plant would likely cause significant harm to water, land, and air, which could cause mass evacuations and take years and many millions of dollars to clean up at taxpayer expense." Oh, okay. Suddenly Republicans care about the environment. Whoa, all right. They have seen the light. It makes you wonder why they've always fought against solar power, wind energy, green energy, and the closing of Line 5. Again, Republicans have no principles, just owning the libs.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that will do it here for this week's Left of Lansing. My thanks again to Rick Haglund from Michigan Advanced on being on this week. Next week, Joe Spaulding joins me, and I'm looking forward to that, let me tell you. Everyone, please have a safe and great holiday weekend. I'm looking forward to having a healthy weekend for a change, catching up on some housework and some yard work, but leaving just enough time to enjoy a Michigan beer, maybe a brat, and maybe a frozen strawberry margarita or two. Or maybe three. As Michigan's The Accidental said about this time of year, we were all waiting for the month of May. Next week, it'll be June though, halfway through 2023. Wow. Everyone, have a great weekend and remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.